What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Surf and Sails podcast. I am one half of the dynamic duo of the Surf and Sails Summit and the Surf and Sails podcast. You can find us at Surf and Sails, SALES.com. What's up, Richard? How are you? Good to see you.
I know, man. You've been on vacation. This is your first one back since you were on vacation. I haven't even caught up about that yet. So
yeah, I checked out.
I am good. I'm glad you checked out, right? You needed that break for sure. Everybody, please take your vacations. They are absolutely necessary and required.
Yeah. You know what else is necessary and required once you get back?
What's that?
Suffering through absolute hell.
Yes.
Because now you have to do all the work that you missed when you were gone.
Yes. I told you before you left, I said,
yes.
And this is for everybody. When it's you true. Go on vacation ahead of time, set the first day back in the office that Monday as blocked out, like you're still on vacation. Don't let people take that time, because then you can get caught up on all this stuff and not feel frustrated. And of course, I gave that advice to Scott, apparently too late.
No, you didn't give it too late. I just failed. Is really what it is. I failed. Right. That's what it is. Well, we're going to be joined today
Richard won Scott 437.
That's right. We're going to be joined today by my friend Aaron McReynolds, who's the co-founder and CEO of Alisio. He is based in Utah, I believe, right? Based in Utah. And I'm also recovering because his beloved Manchester United destroyed Liverpool this past Saturday, and I'm a little stung by it. Welcome to the show, Aaron. How's it going, man?
Thank you. Yeah, it's going well. Thank you. Yeah, I'm still on a bit of a high. So
yeah, go ahead.
Let me enjoy it.
Yep. Use this time to gloat. Go ahead. Tell everybody real quick, you know, about your company and what problem is out there that you're trying to solve, and a little bit about where you're at right now.
Yeah, great. So Alisio solves the answer to a very simple question. How do you know you've had a great day in sales, both as a manager and as a rep? Been in B2B SaaS sales for about 9 years. I always try to answer this question with a spreadsheet in my career, a point framework per se. And after doing it in a spreadsheet for 9 years, we decided to go and build a product that could solve for that.
Can you give one to Scott today, for free? Please give a copy, because every day Scott suffers. He could close $100,000 a day and still tell me how bad a day he had in sales.
That's all of us, right? That's it. That's why we try and do this. So
I found one of my tribe, Richard. Found one.
Yes,
of my
but
tribe.
He's solving the problem.
Yes. Let him tell us more of how he's solving the problem.
No, of course. So today the product, kind of three main areas of focus. One, top of funnel productivity, answering that question in a 10-point framework. So every user on the platform is held to 10 points a day. Essentially, great day in sales, 10 points, great day in health, 10,000 steps, very easy concept. Every customer picks the KPIs that are important to their organization. We pipe that data in from your CRM. You can upload it manually, so you get recognized for things outside of the CRM tracking. And then we gamified it with leaderboards, competitions, real-time rewards and recognition. And then the other piece that I'd always done in a Google Docs was my internal meetings. So one-on-ones, pipeline reviews, pips, et cetera, all of that is tracked and archived in the platform to help managers be even more efficient and increase their span of control. So that's the platform today. Working on V2, which is the AI element to what we're doing, working on delivering those insights even more dynamically, and being even more predictive around which KPIs are working and actually delivering revenue at the end of the day. So even just, you know, about Scott, $100,000 a day, great. How do I know he's going to do that tomorrow and the day after? Can we repeat that success? So that's the platform.
Pretty cool stuff. I don't know if you heard specifically, Richard, but did you see how he built in 10,000 steps and like a leaderboard? And that's part of a healthy day in sales, which I think is pretty relevant considering you just spent some time on the, you know, state of sales, mental health report that you always do with Jeff and all that kind of stuff. Yes. So Aaron's got some of that element, you know, that you can build in if you so choose, right?
Yes, I love it. My only recommendation, because I always have recommendations, right, Scott, is, you know, I would encourage it not to be 10,000, right? There's only so much somebody can get done. And I think the data out there says that to see a noticeable healthy difference, it's like 6,000 or 7,000. like 10,000 was just a good marketing number when they came up with it. So, because my challenge, my concern is, if we don't accomplish these things on a daily basis, are we then reinforcing a negative mindset, which could be Richard's mindset? Like, you know, I sort of focus on this negative stuff, particularly on the mental health side of stuff. So that would be my first question. That's a good question
for Aaron. It's like,
how do you balance that?
Leaderboards can be good, but can they also be demotivating? And how do you, as a manager or leader, strike that balance appropriately?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And for us, yeah, I think 10 points, simple to digest, easy to follow. I think, you know, you've seen it before in sales. There are going to be top performers. They're going to people that come in and want to get 12 points every day. There are people that are going to struggle to get their 10 points. The aspect of the coaching and the training within the platform is exactly that, Richard. It's, hey, Scott's only getting 6 points every day. Instead of firing him or letting him go by the wayside, how can I encourage him? Where can I train him? Where can I coach him? And the weighting of the points that we allocate is flexible down to the individual. So if Richard's really good at cold calls and that's what he loves, Scott isn't. He's great at emails, but hasn't made a cold call for the last 3 months. If I could get 5 more cold calls out of Scott, great. But if Richard's really efficient there and that's where he drives productivity, like maybe we turn that dial up a little bit more, get a few more calls out of you because we know that's where your success comes from. And so I think, you know, at the end of the day, it falls on the manager. We've all had managers who are absent. They miss the one-on-ones, they miss the pipe reviews, and the reps just fall even further behind. What we found is the reps enjoy the platform because it gets to kind of showcase where their strengths are and highlight where they're struggling and say, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Manager, can you actually come in and help me? Like, I'm doing my best and I know it's not enough. Can you train and coach me even more?
So I got a question on that. How much of that do you think, and Scott, this is a good question for you too, it could be generational, right? Like, I'm Gen X. If I work somewhere and I start to see my name on a leaderboard and I'm not getting my 5,000 or 10,000 steps, or I'm not getting this, I might feel micromanaged, right? It's my belief that starting with the millennials and into Gen Z, they want this constant feedback because that's the world they're living in, right? So have you seen, just, you know, anecdotally, have you seen that, you know, generationally, it might help some more than others?
Yeah. And I think when we started the platform, you know, I had this concept of, oh, it's going to rest the hours, right? They love the gamification. They love being rewarded, recognized, that kind of Gen Z area. What we found is, you know, one of our customers, MongoDB, we have 8 enterprise sales teams on the platform. These are the people that I thought it probably wouldn't resonate with as well. What we found is it's not that level of micromanagement. It's that opportunity to kind of showcase, this is what I do each day. This is what I enjoy. If I'm an enterprise rep, I have success, but I don't make cold calls. It's kind of that autonomy to say, that is okay. As long as you're still generating pipeline and you're hitting quota, you can run your day the way that makes sense to you. And, you know, why the platform, our slogan is empower the individual. I believe firmly that every sales rep is different, right? We all operate at a different cadence. What I'm good at in sales may not be where Richard is good at in sales. And so instead of this blanket, everyone makes 60 cold calls a day kind of mantra that goes on in sales today, and I think is a lazy approach to management, now you get to essentially showcase, this is how I operate. This is what I'm good at. If you want to replicate that with your other reps, great. But the data that's coming out of the platform is saying, okay, maybe the way we've done it historically isn't the right way. And now the data backs that up. I remember I had a conversation. I was working at Qualtrics. I was a successful rep, gone back to our presence clubs. And my manager kind of came as a good friend of mine. He's like, I love you, but I cannot replicate you. I kind of operated different. And so what I said was, look, now you kind of have the data of what I'm doing every day. You'll see there's not a lot of cold calls in there, but I'm very efficient on emails. Put me in front of someone, I can close them, give me recognition for my on-sites, but that's an entire day out of the office. The CRM shows nothing, but I've actually been in an on-site and I'm closing my deals. I was now getting recognized and rewarded. So as an individual, I felt empowered at that point to run my book the way that made sense for me. And so that's kind of a lot of the psychology of the platform, is because everyone's different, you can now recognize those differences, reward them, and maybe go and coach everybody else on the team to say, hey, look, 60 cold calls is not the way. Richard's our top performer, and he's sending a lot of emails. Go ask Richard, What are you doing? What is your cadence on emails? What are you saying in those messages that I'm not saying?
The only thing that matters more than that is, even if I have those KPIs, is am I closing more business than Scott? Right? Like that's the number, right? Because that's what Scott and I will get down to. And you know, I haven't seen Scott and talked to Scott in like 10 or 12 days. So I apologize for picking on you so much, my man. It just shows how much I miss you and love you.
It's getting, you're making up for lost time. But the thing that you just said, even though, Richard, is like the only thing that matters is, am I selling better than Scott, right? Do I have more revenue than Scott? Here's the thing though. If that's the only leaderboard, some people can get discouraged because they feel like they're not seen for contributions that they're making or progress that they're making or effort that they're putting in. And so you lose nuance and context there. And I think some people can kind of tap out at that point. And they're like, well, I'm way far behind. The only thing Aaron ever looks at is revenue. Why even try? But I think what he's saying is, when you have the ability to layer in these other metrics, if you will, and you get to pick whichever ones you care about, the steps thing could be dials, could be number of trainings attended, whatever the heck it is. Now you have the ability to recognize different types of people for different types of behaviors. And it feels, to me at least, more inclusive, right? And you're giving people an opportunity to shine in different types of skill sets. I think that's part of the.
I think as well.
Yeah.
That's part of it. And can Richard repeat the quota attainment? We now have the data to know what you do to do that. I think what happens oftentimes when we only focus on revenue, you might hit for a quarter, look like a rock star at 150%. The data actually tells me, yeah, you have the skill, but your will is showing me that you haven't built anything for the next two quarters. Now we can tell that story in that relationship where not only is this, you know, Richard a winner today, I know with confidence he's going to be a winner in, you know, the next quarter and tomorrow as well.
But how do you, and maybe this is the other thing I like about this, is that to some extent, you can also use your platform to explain to upper management how unrealistic the goals that they've set are. Right? Now you have that evidence that says,
now the math that to back that up.
Yes, exactly. And so I'm curious, have you run into that? And just in general, in your experience, how have you ever even told a boss if they didn't have those numbers, right? Or maybe you always had the Excel sheet, but how do you go back and tell the executives that the numbers are off?
Yeah, it's great, great point. So we had a quadrant system when I was at Qualtrics. You lost kind of 10% of your number based on cold calls. And like I mentioned, I'm always transparent about it. Like I didn't love cold calls. I was never an SDR. I stepped into my first role as an AE. So I kind of missed that cadence piece for the outbound call motion. And so I would always hit. I hit 7 of 8 quarters in a row in a company where only 23% of people hit, but I didn't make the cold calls. So on that quadrant, I was always really kind of negative to it because I'd be in the top, but I'd be left of where I should be because I had this negative 10% missing every single time just because I wasn't making cold calls. And so that was always my story and my pitch to management was, hey, I'm good at what I'm doing. Let me show you why. Here's the data to kind of back it up. Maybe we need to rethink the fact that 10% of this, you know, report is based on cold calls only. I'm good at emails. I'm good at XYZ. Let me showcase that. And so that for me was a bit of a battle. And then when I stepped into leadership, I try to run my team that way of you tell me what you're good at. I always kind of implemented the spreadsheet at the beginning in a one-on-one and said to the rep, what do you think your strengths are? Oh, I'm really good at emails, so I don't make any cold calls. Okay, great. Let's trial it. You show me that that is true. And then if it's not, then we go in and, you know, kind of drip some cold calls into what you're doing every day and see if turning that dial is going to get a little extra productivity and performance out of you. What we've done with the platform, though, is we built it with the reps in mind. We did not build this platform for RevOps. Obviously, we sell it for RevOps, and that's part of that story. But we built it for the reps.
Did you ask?
I like the hallelujah.
I was just saying hallelujah. It was built for the. It was built.
Oh,
for
he said
reps.
Hallelujah. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, having been a rep, you've gone through this experience and these pains are very real and familiar. Leaderboard concepts have been around for a long time, whether, you know, I wrote it on a whiteboard 20 years ago or a spreadsheet 15 years ago and shared it. And there's been a few iterations since then. Where do you see the leaderboard kind of category going? You mentioned that you're working on like V2 and then I'm sure V3 and whatnot of the product, and you know, AI component is coming into play. Like, where is this kind of category going in your mind?
Yeah. I personally think the leaderboards piece of it is very secondary in nature, right? Like, I think that's always within salespeople to be competitive. Base that we're good. A lot of ex-athletes in the sales world, like, that competitive nature is always within us. And so we have some customers who are like, I need a leaderboard on a TV screen across the sales floor. And then I have others and they're like, oh, we don't. Sure. It's great. Nice that it's in there. That's not really the driver for why we want the product. But I think that that competitive nature of salespeople, I don't think it's going away. And what I found is, you know, I went and I sold for Okta. The day I joined, COVID kind of hit. We were the last people out the building in the Bay. Never saw anyone for a year and a half at Okta. And I always kind of felt disconnected. That kind of sales floor culture, energy, et cetera, to me, that disappeared overnight. And so for me, the leaderboards and, you know, the little pieces of recognition and rewards felt to me like a way that I could connect with a team that maybe I didn't know that way, that well. And so, you know, part of what we're trying to do with the platform is give some culture back to the sales floor. Like, have that energy, have the excitement. Every time you book a demo, have it go to Slack, get recognized, get rewarded. And the people that maybe aren't hitting revenue and getting rewarded at the presence clubs and the QBRs, they get some recognition for the hustle. It's like, hey, I know I'm not hitting yet, but I just booked 3 demos this week. And to some reps, that's as big of a win as hitting 150% of quota. And so I think that culture piece of the leaderboards and the gamification is there. But I don't ever lead with that as the primary value of the platform.
Yeah, I like that culture piece a lot. I remember in the times when Scott and I were looking for jobs, you know, there were times where you had to convince yourself of like, okay, I only talked to 2 recruiters this week, but at least I talked to 2 people about my job, right? And sometimes you needed to remind yourself of those little wins. So I really like that approach. And particularly for those, you know, that are doing that. I want to shift topics a little bit, right? You know, you're selling a tool into, you know, our world, sales, revenue, those places. 2023 was tough, right? Everybody just shut the budget down. And it sounds like the budget is getting trickled on a little bit. But what have you learned about running an organization when you run into that hard no budget excuse, right? Like, what are a couple of takeaways you could give? Well, I guess I have 2 questions. One, is 2024 getting easier than last year? Unless last year was super easy for you. And what are some of the takeaways you have from your experience of these downturns?
Yeah. I see it as a blessing and a curse. So our first round of funding was October 22. We kind of did our first real round in June of 23. Yeah, we were selling a concept at the beginning of 23. We were selling, you know, an early product for the second half of 23. And we were able to go get 20 customers. But your point on budgets disappearing or gone, absolutely.
So how did you, let's press there for a second. How did you get 20 customers in 2023 on, and not in a negative way, vaporware, right? Like you're selling a dream, you're selling the idea, right? I mean, if Scott was your advisor, I don't know if he is, then I know that that's how you did it, but because he's good at that. But how did you do that in one of the toughest markets to sell? What were you able to clue in on with your customers that built that trust?
Yeah, I try, again, I've always sold, like, try and be simple. And so we'll go in, we'll talk to these organizations. The first question I ask is, what tools do you have today? Clary, Gong, Outreach, Salesforce, 8 tools get named. Okay. So you know that you had a good day today. You know you had a great day and your sales reps did what you asked them to do. Not really. Okay. Did you know that they did that yesterday? No, not really. Okay. If I could give you visibility and transparency into that and then tell you which leading indicators are going to drive success and revenue, would that be important to you? Yes. Also, I'd like to say, is your sales team bigger or smaller than it was last year? Almost every single time, smaller. Okay. So you're doing more with less. So now you need to drive a little more juice out of every single lemon. If I could help you do that, would that be of value to you? Yes. Okay. So kind of those two things off the bat, we still tie to revenue. And so I don't think it's a nice to have. Like to me, that's a need to have. You still have to hit. Numbers haven't changed that much. You now have less reps to go and do that. This kind of problem of productivity in a remote sales world, in a difficult selling environment. That's why I say like there's pros and cons to when we started. But you know, I think attaching to that narrative, yes, we're tied to revenue, we're tied to productivity, we're tied to performance, and not all is well. I think it would be harder to sell this product if everyone was hitting 100% of quota because everything is okay, but everything is not okay right now. If we can help you and show that increase, is there value? Yes. And so we tout a 32% increase in productivity across our customer base. The last POC we ran was 96%. 96% increase in productivity from cold calls all the way to revenue generation. And so that story, I think, is a
Well, that
difficult
sales leader
story to
should have been
tell.
fired. So if they got a 96%, Scott, who hired that sales leader?
You must have. Must have been your must have been your.
That's
I
amazing.
think the most interesting thing that Aaron just said was that it's you could make the argument that it's harder to sell in good times because everybody's doing good, therefore nobody thinks that they need anything, which is a total reframe of the way everybody has talked about the industry and the market for the last year, right? I love that.
So is it easier this year than last year? And I'm asking it economically. I get the sense of, hey, you got funding, so you got a little bit of runway. You have some customer and customer stories that you can now tell, which was probably a little harder last year till you got a couple of those customers. Is it hard, as you see people spending and not spending, is it easier to have these conversations, or is it, no, it's the way it's always been. I still got to prove myself, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's still tough. I don't think everyone's wallets have just opened up just because January rolled around for a new year. Like it still feels like everything is under scrutiny. Our outreach efforts are to VP of sales, CROs. But every single conversation we have is at the end of the day, it falls on the CFO's desk, right? And that wasn't always the way 2, 5 years ago. The budgets are so tight right now. We have to go in and say, hey, we can replace a tool. Hey, we can show value, an increase in productivity, which leads to an increase in revenue. Like we still have to prove those things out. And so, unfortunately, we run POCs because you have to in this day and age, right? So we'll run a 2-week
So that's
POC.
new.
Hey, what was your performance? Yeah, I've never been a POC seller before. And so that thing that's new is where I want to touch it. I want to play with it. I want to see that it works before I just go and spend money on it, which I think it was easier back then, where it's like, oh, I got all this discretionary budget. It's the end of the year or the start of the year. I can just go spend it.
So what
Now you
is,
still have to prove value
so
to
what
every
is,
purchase.
so, I mean, I think I know some answers around this, but I like this. What was the mental hump to get over? We got to put a lot of, resources into some of these POCs, right? That takes that's a heavy lift, right? The
I
theory
think
is
we
if
all
you've
just took
done,
a deep breath as soon as you said that.
and it's I see the value of it, right? I know Scott's afraid of free trials. He hates them.
I don't like free trials. Yeah.
Is it a necessary evil? Was it like, you know what, let's try this three times and see what happens, and then you're like, well, hell, we know that these are all three of these closed. That's not enough to, build a business, but we should keep going. Like, where did that epiphany come from for you? Because I don't
Yeah.
think people think about it that way.
Yeah, I think for us, and again, probably stage appropriate, but we were a brand new tool, brand new solution, trying to get those first customers. Even customer 10 through 20, we had to prove the value of what we're doing. It's a new concept, it's a new product. We're unknown. I get that. And so it's like, hey, we're confident in the product. Let's go run it for 2 weeks. If you see an increase in productivity, let's move forward.
So I
and
get
then we
that.
started
Like
to see
I
those
get
trials
that as a,
converting.
yeah, I see that. Like if you're a new company, I'm a big believer of like you're trading free for product feedback, stories, logo usage. Like there's tons of value there. Now that you have 20 customers, are you more, do you scrutinize how many POCs you do more now? Will you still do them? You know, what is that?
I think we're doing, so we have two approaches. If, you know, some people are comfortable with a 2 week POC, for us, implementation is under 2 hours, right? And that was something we built from day one that I was just, you know, so imperative on, was like this implementation has to be so simple. We just need to be able to turn it on and start showing value straight away, which we can do, which is why I'm not that afraid of a POC. If you don't want 2 weeks and you want a month or 2 months or 3 months, sure, let's do a 13-month contract. You can do an opt-out after the first month, but if not, like, there we go, we're already live and ready to go. But I, you know, I don't shy away from the 2 weeks. We see that increase in productivity. We have a positive conversion on the POCs. Obviously, I would love to get away from that, and that's kind of the goal. But at this stage, it's working for us, albeit maybe 2 weeks added to a sales cycle that I don't love.
That's not
but
that
does
big
it really
of a,
add
that's
2 weeks?
Not that big of a problem, though.
I don't think that adds 2 weeks. I think that actually shortens it. It just means that's the length of your sales cycle.
Well, you're saying it's an additional 2 weeks instead of an additional 6 months, is what
right.
Richard's saying.
Right. Thank
so you
you
could make the case that it shortens it. Yeah. The key there, though, is you can't just have this like freemium thing where people sign up and then they're completely left alone for weeks to mess with the product. That doesn't work. That's the type
Agreed.
Of free trial stuff that I hate. If you've got mechanisms in place to actually make sure people get onboarded properly, adopt the product and start using it, and you know, you have a mechanism to like show them a specific feature set or something that they haven't utilized yet, and you have the ability to show them data which, you know, shows that they're seeing improvement, things like that. That's how you make these free trials work. Right. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't do that. They're just like, here's a link to a free trial. I'll call you in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So Aaron, I got to-
No, it's all part of the sales cycle for- Oh, God. Yeah.
No, keep going. It's all part of the sales cycle.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's all part of the sales cycle for us. It's like, we won't start a POC unless you give me the data of where your performance is at right now. How many emails did you send? How many cold calls did you make in the previous month, et cetera? Like, we need something to benchmark against to prove the value. So it's not just turn it on, go play, touch it. It's all part of kind of like getting to the close. That's almost like an instant value creator for us, which is probably why I don't shy away from it. And I'm 100% in agreement with Scott. If you just give someone a tool, go play with it for a month, they're going to play with it for 2 days, and then you're 4 weeks behind on that sales process. So yeah, we're very involved. You know, we book the Friday in the first week of the trial. I have to talk to the buyer. How's the trial going? Any headaches, any concerns, et cetera? No, looks good. Okay, let's start talking about contracts and getting that done. So we try and use it to an advantage.
As you talk to other founders, right? Assuming you have a network of other people, in terms of getting to market and growing revenue, what are the challenges you're seeing and hearing across the marketplace, right? And to a certain extent, are they all gravitating to this POC thing now that they've seen you do it?
Yeah. You know, great network. You can see I'm in a shared workspace, plenty of founders around at similar stages. I would just say that the list of challenges is long. Like, there are some groups that I know where, you know, they're doing well, revenue's coming in, great. Others where they just cannot get off the ground. And so you'll see logos off the wall disappear every few weeks and wonder where they've gone. I think the challenge is, you know, you have to make your case attached to value somehow. I don't think there's a market right now for just nice to have products. I think we had that for a number of years. Now you have to be crucial all the way, like I mentioned, to the CFO. Like, there has to be dollars attached to the product. You have to be able to prove the value quickly as well. I know we do 1 year contracts, right? And that's probably not the easiest way to sell as a startup, but I've been diehard on that since day one of like, no, let's do an annual contract, 3 years if we can. Whereas I see, you know, a lot of people going and saying, oh, we're still a month trial, pay as you go. And like that drop off rate, the churn rate is just so high.
Brutal.
And so for us, we just didn't want to get into that world. We just try to avoid that since day one. VCs are on board with that narrative. And so, yeah, we just know that from day one, we got to go prove value. I think the POCs do that. We talk to our customers probably every week at the moment, if not more. I'm on a text basis with every single buyer at those 20 customers. We're constantly getting the feedback, making sure the experience is good. You know, the customer experience piece, you know, I used to sell a customer experience product, so I think I'm maybe a little bit more adamant on it. But like in today's environment, if you buy a product and then that seller just disappears until renewal, like those are just not renewing either. Or it's renewal time. Oh, we've had to tack on 25%, 50% because our costs have gone up and the business is struggling, etc. So I think delivering a world-class customer experience from day one is what is going to keep us alive in a very difficult environment, and the fact that we attach the revenue and that we believe we're a need to have.
But
it's not easy.
A part of that contract thing that's not talked about enough is how brutally hard it is to make a switch if you start with like month to month or 90 days or whatever, and then you realize, oh crap, we've got problems, we need to move to annual deals. That sea change is brutal. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've tried to go through that before, but you know, you face all sorts of resistance from the sales team who've gotten used to selling in this way that's like, hey, just try it out, you know, you'll love it. And all of a sudden they've got to adjust and start selling annual contracts. It can be hell. So you might as well just, you know, bite the bullet early on, do it the right way, even if it slows velocity, make sure everybody that you're bringing on board truly gets it and wants to be there. So I'm with you. We've got to move towards the end of the show here and kind of wrapping up, but how we like to end every show is we say, hey, how can we be helpful to you? Do you have any questions for us? So how can we be helpful to you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think one, you know, you guys have lived this world for a lot longer than I have. I've been selling for 9 years in B2B SaaS. What do you think have been the biggest changes that you've seen in your career that are most kind of relevant today in that sales cycle, the way that people are buying today versus what you've seen historically?
Two big things bubble up for me. Back when Richard and I were first starting, it was probably all a numbers game for most people. At least that was the thing that you heard all the time. You know, it's more, 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 more calls, more emails, whatever, more prospects, just more, and we'd convert. And that doesn't work anymore. And you don't really hear people talking about that the same way. So you've moved away from volume based to, you know, kind of relevant based and more strategic, and not just at the enterprise level. That approach has always been there at the enterprise level, but it's come down market, like into mid market and even into sort of SMB level size deals. So that's number one. And you know, the second biggest change to me is the ability to work remotely and having a remote sales org. You know, Richard and I worked together at one company, and I'll flub the numbers a little bit, but we had roughly 150 sales reps under one roof in one office. Like, I don't think that's going to happen anymore, both from in-office versus remote perspective, but also actually the days of hiring sales orgs of that size are probably gone, at least for the foreseeable future. So those things to me are really massive changes that I've seen since, you know, I started my career until now. Richard?
I think there's a couple. One is leadership has been exposed for lack of knowing how to be leaders. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It means that particularly in the startup world, when you get promoted, particularly in sales, nowhere on the job description is, you know, knowing how to motivate people and have those tough conversations and all those things, which is, you know, one of the cool things about your tool is it assists with that, right? It helps you know how to not make it personal and keep it about the business and provide some feedback, but also lets you leverage, you know, one of the notes I took was, you know, you manage teams and you coach individuals, right? And this, that's what you do. So one, there's this exposure to leadership that is now being addressed a little better. I think that's one of the changes. I think the technical skills a salesperson has to have completely changed, right? You've got to have tech skills to a certain extent just to navigate the number of tools you have. I think that's gotten better. And I think companies are finally realizing that salespeople are not data entry. That like every time I ask my rep to input a single keystroke into the CRM means they're not actually trying to talk to the customer, right? And so the ability of all these tools, right? Like I'm a big fan of Fathom or whatever, that can summarize my notes and get them in the CRM. That's amazing to me because now my rep can kind of quickly look at them, go, yeah, maybe add one or two things, but the CRM is taken care of. Now the VP of sales, the CEO doesn't need to go into a deal review and ask me questions that are already in the CRM because they're really good at answers in the CRM. So those are the pieces. And then, you know, we could go down the AI route for tomorrow, you know, till tomorrow. That coaching piece that's coming out of the AI spot, I think is going to be super helpful. My guess is, and you don't have to answer, is that somewhere in your tool, the new AI piece will be providing that feedback immediately to the rep of things that they could focus on. So they don't necessarily have to wait for their manager to get back to them, right? Like that's, you know, having, that's my hypothesis. So, because I think that's going to help too. So that's, those are the things I've seen change and continue to see.
Do you think maybe to your point, Richard, you know, what I kind of saw as a trend is, you know, 2 to 5 years ago, like lots of people were doing well, great sales environment. You had so many ICs that were successful as sales reps promoted into leadership because they were performing well as a sales rep. And yeah. Then now I feel like you have so many managers that either didn't ever think they were going to be a manager or got there earlier than they should yeah. have. And now yeah. don't know how to manage correctly. Do you see that?
That's what I'm talking. That's what I'm talking about. And it's been that way forever, right? And you know the definition one of my coaches gave me a long time ago is that the soft skills are the hard skills, right? Nobody has taught people how to do conflict resolution. Like when it comes down to, you know, oh, someone poached a deal from my territory, or you know, we're going to change territories, or we're about to roll out the new comp plan. Nobody has taught these people how to be strategic listeners to still deliver the message, but create the safe space that a conversation can have, right? Nobody's taught those skills. And that to me is, you know, and again, you know, the good thing is that people are getting promoted and they're being performing well, but the bad thing is leadership hasn't wanted to invest in those things. And I think they now understand they need to more and more.
Yeah, I think I'm always surprised, you know, we'll go into these discussions. I'll ask that question, hey, you know, you've had a great day. What KPIs do you focus on? And the amount of people that are like, I need you to tell me because I don't know.
Yeah,
which kind of shocked me in this process.
And you know, for me, it'd be like, ask, you know, if you're selling to a team, is asking your manager how many one-on-one conversations, and I don't mean one-on-one meetings, but how many conversations a day did you have with someone on your sales team about how their day is going, right? That's, you know, and that's a starting point to some extent. That's not maybe where y'all need to be at the moment, but that's the piece I feel is missing because nobody's talking to that, where reps managers are still dashboard managers and Excel spreadsheets. You know, when I worked for Scott, he used to text us all the time because we had like six managers over these 150 people. And he'd be like, get off your CPU. Right. And for those who don't know,
sales manager just wants to sit there, look at their dashboard over and over and over and do nothing. I'm like, get off your computer, dude. Go talk to somebody. Go coach somebody, Richard.
Yes, exactly. Go touch grass, Richard.
Yeah. That's it. Well, we appreciate you spending time with us today, Aaron. Of course. Congratulations on the progress and success with Alicio so far. Where should people reach out to you, learn more about what you're up to, connect with you, that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, LinkedIn's easiest. Aaron McReynolds on LinkedIn. My email, aaron@alicio.ai. Easiest channels.
Awesome. And don't you have a new website? Aaron is a smarter soccer fan than scottlease.com.
He cannot make that claim.
Football right all day. But. I was going to bring a flag today. I thought about
you
it this
should've.
Morning. I was like, I should have just had one just to hold up. But
listen, if you might want to wait until you repeat that performance before you get to that level of bravado. So
right,
I'm not getting carried away.
Yeah,
Scott's going to fax over a paper trophy to you later.
Yeah,
today.
Yeah. That's my it. Next LinkedIn post might get ugly if he does that.
Right. Oh,
all right,
pleasure, gentlemen.
All right,
thank
Aaron.
You so much.
Thanks so
appreciate
much,
it.
Bud.
Be in touch.